From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 22nd day of November 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Bake. She's from Stuart Peterson. We'll take a look at the cash grain side with Pete Peterson of the Climbers facility outside of Logansport, Indiana, where they make ethanol. And then as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And it all happens on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for the 22nd day of November, Wednesday afternoon, the day before Thanksgiving. We're now joined by Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson. Jackie, I bet you're busy getting ready for tomorrow.
Well, I'm sure myself and a lot of people are doing that very same thing. And before we get into this, Todd, I want to wish a happy Thanksgiving to all of our listeners, you know, and that they have a safe and very happy holiday with all family members. It's a special time of the year.
Let's talk a little bit about the marketplace, too. I'm wondering if you've been looking at the technical side of the market. It's been pretty quiet trade, so let's start there, please.
Well, you know, I think it's really important that people focus on where the resistance and support is, especially as we go into this Thanksgiving weekend, because Friday's trade can be very volatile at times, you know, because the number of traders we actually have drops dramatically on Friday. And so for March corn, support's at 348 and three quarters, and resistance is at 360. You know, nothing really new. And March beans, we've got support at 991, and we have resistance up at 1022. And so we'll see once if we can surpass that. It would really be a nice thing to be able to see as we move forward.
As you look across the Midwest, do you see differences because of the harvest rate, the harvest season, how long it's taken, and what's been happening with basis at all?
Well, there's no question that there's differences. In fact, the word out in the country right now is that we have wet corn piling up in a lot of places. People are just trying to get it off. And, you know, that can be a real plus for people who already have it off, because we're seeing that the demand for dry corn is really improving, which is driving basis higher. And I'm going to encourage everybody, take advantage of this, whether it means locking your basis in if you don't want to price it, because the cost to exporters now is even higher than it was before, and they're being undercut by Argentina like crazy. And so, you know, this may not be a long opportunity.
And I take it you think farmers should take advantage of it.
Absolutely. That's what I said. You know, you've got to look at opportunities in this marketplace, you know, because a dime can go away in basis in a day or in an hour.
You know, earlier in the week at the Farm Assets Conference, I was asked about this because we were looking forward to February and the USDA numbers. However, there's a set of numbers somewhere in here, and I don't know whether it's an official release or an unofficial release that comes out that gives some outlook. Do you have any ideas?
It's an official release. It comes out from the Department of Ag, and you know it's a 10-year outlook is what it is. It's actually coming out on the 28th of November, and this is another reason I think it's important that we really, really pay attention to it, and especially on the bean side. It gives us, you know, our first look at supply and demand for the next 10 years, and I think we could see a really big revision in soybeans, because last year they really missed it. You know, nobody expected this crop to be what it is. And so the question I have is, you know, will this and that the really large South American bean crop that's in storage, as well as the one that's getting ready to be harvested, cause our traders to stick a fork in the bean market and call it done?
that's a tough call. Do you think traders are ready to give this up at this point?
Well, I there's such a fickle group of people. It's really, really difficult because, the U.S. dollar has been really favoring South America because the real's been weaker. So we've seen them selling a lot of corn. And, you know, as harvest gets closer, we're going to see them sell a lot of beans. I don't think they're going to just kill it completely, but I do think that we have to be thinking about this and the possibilities that, you know, you could be looking at a market that, let's say, is 20 or 25 cents lower than we are right now. You know, it's one of those things that's in the background, you know, and could be a real shock to people. And you'll look at a market and say, well, why is it doing that? Well, it could very well be because of this forecast coming out. They're looking for opportunity to be able to trade.
Speaking of forecast, or weather, I suppose, and that's kind of a rough transition, but that's where I want to go, is to weather. In South America, there are some dry areas. We've been talking about La Nina in Argentina. We've also had a lot of discussions about the beginning of the growing season in Brazil. They didn't have rain for a long time, but they got rain again last week, didn't they?
They did. They did, and it really helped everything a great deal. The big thing is Mato Grosso. You know, Mato Grosso is the largest corn producer in Brazil. And it looks as if, you know, they got such a late planting start on beans that they grow nothing but safrina corn up there, second, you know, double crop corn. And it may reduce the acres on safrina corn by as much as 10% this year. But I thought this was interesting. Their average price for corn for this last season was $2.35 a bushel. Would we be crying at that? And the lowest prices that came in June and July between $1.70 and $2 a bushel. So that's pretty scary. And yet at the same time, forward contracting on new crop is almost non-existent at this point in time. And it's just because the prices are low.
No wonder the Brazilians can sell corn into Mexico, it would seem, at that kind of low price. I suppose maybe by the time you get it all, the freight all in, U.S. corn is always cheaper to get there because it only has to go by rail across the line generally. Speaking of which, NAFTA this week, still not that great.
Oh, I don't. You can't see me, but I'm just shaking my head. Okay, you know, this North American Free Trade Agreement has just been a pain in our side since it came about, and they're in their fifth round of negotiations right now down in Mexico City, and they still have just some very major differences to resolve. You know, Mexico and Canada are not at all on board with some of the U.S. proposals that they came out with in the fourth round of negotiations. And basically, what we're looking to do is try and modernize the agreement, making it a more balanced deal. At this point in time, you know how you see the lawyers thing, you know, with the balance, the lady with the balance thing. At this point in time, Canada and Mexico are way up at there, and we're way down there, you know, so I think it's going to take some real work to get this thing complete, but I have confidence that they're going to succeed at it.
Hey, let's look at the other side of the world. Did you see the news item out of China that there were some potential hog expansions, but that these were really different because they're going to put them up in their growing region, up in that northeastern corner of, for corn and soybeans, that is, mostly for corn, of that nation in China. What'd you think of that?
Well, the numbers that come from China when it comes to hogs is just absolutely astounding. You know, it's just amazing. And now they had this announcement that eight companies announced and confirmed that they plan to produce about 17 million pigs annually in the northeastern part of China in the coming years. And, you know, China's pork market is $1 trillion a year. A trillion. I mean, that's just really hard to even fathom. But this could raise, you know, this could raise the corn needs. Well, this will raise the corn needs and reduce the supply or the surplus in the northeastern part. So, you know, China's trying to make sure that they don't end up with these big gluts of corn sitting in certain places that it's hard to get to another place. But in turn, that reduces corn availability for the southern hog producer. And so that could potentially really be good for us, you know, because it may force them to have to import more corn. So that would be great. But wow, it's at one point in time in the future, they expect to be producing about 120 million pigs a year in China.
Wow, that is a lot of hogs. Holy
That's
smokers.
A lot of manure, man, I'm telling you.
Hey, you always do a lot of digging. Did you look around and find anything fun to end our conversation on this Wednesday?
This one just tickles me, I'm telling you. In London, they are going to start using coffee waste and turn it into biofuel to power some of London's 9,500 buses. And they said Londoners produce about 440 million pounds of coffee waste a year. And there's a company that takes the grounds, they extract the oil from it, and then they process it into B20 biofuel, which is coffee oil and diesel together. And the thing that's cool is that the buses can run on that fuel without any modifications at all. So they figure it's going to take just over 2.55 million cups of coffee a day to create enough B20 biofuel to run a London bus for a year. So with, you know, with a population of 8.8 million people, granted babies don't drink coffee, but that live in London, I think that it's a real possible thing, you know. And now if they could just get oil from tea, they'd probably have it made, you know.
Yeah, that was my first thought. I was like, really? Do they drink a lot of coffee in London? But
they obviously
right.
do,
hey, so
you know.
Apparently so. That must be true. Hey, thanks so much, and have a really great Thanksgiving.
Oh, you too, Todd. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
That's Jackie Bakes. She is with Stuart Peterson. Couple of quick news items for the afternoon. This one on NAFTA. The road forward for the North American Free Trade Agreement remains stacked with challenges, including a continued standoff on crucial topics and a near impossible deadline of late March. But with the political spotlight turned away from them, negotiators did finally make some progress during the latest round. U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer didn't attend the talks in person, but he did express some continued frustrations, saying that while progress had been made on some of the efforts towards modernizing NAFTA, that he remains concerned about the lack of headway. He made his comments Tuesday in a statement after the round closed and said, "Thus far, we have seen no evidence that Canada or Mexico are willing to seriously engage on provisions that will lead to a rebalanced agreement." Now, despite Lighthizer's apparent dissatisfaction with progress, or lack thereof, made in Mexico City, another senior U.S. official said he wouldn't read too much into the lack of closure. Some of the most substantial progress made includes food safety measures, digital trade, regulatory practices, and telecommunications. And one other note today, this one out of Washington, D.C., where they're still waiting for Bill Northey, the current director of agriculture for the state of Iowa, to be confirmed into the United States Department of Agriculture. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell apparently will try to persuade Senator Ted Cruz to lift his hold on USDA Undersecretary nominee Northey. Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa says, "When it comes to the farm bill, we need that man in place." And from that standpoint, the leader said he would help to move it along. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You know, dicamba drift has been a really big story and continues to be so for agriculture this year. The big question is what happens in the future for the products. At a recent press conference hosted by DTN, University of Missouri weed scientist Dr. Kevin Bradley said the damage that's been done in the past growing season was really quite significant.
I think we'd all recognize that there's way more that actually happens that isn't turned into the departments of agriculture, and so we felt like we wanted to try to capture that. So somewhere around 3.6 million acres is what the damage totaled in 2017.
Bradley says there's never been a problem like this in U.S. agriculture before. As proof of that, he cites research from Bob Hertzler at Iowa State University.
Basically, it just shows the lowest observable dose that caused significant crop injury. And unfortunately, we have chosen this technology and this herbicide that I don't know if you could pick a crop that is more sensitive to dicamba than soybeans that aren't Xtend soybeans. So 0.005% of the labeled rate is reported here in this graph. Some work we did years ago and was eventually published that 1/20,000th of the normal use rate. And so part of the challenge here is just getting across in our heads that there's nothing like this and there's very low doses that cause significant visual response to soybean.
While physical drift of the product itself has been a problem, improper tank cleaning, he says, has also been found to be an issue. It doesn't take much leftover dicamba in the tank to do a crop damage. He says temperature inversions with a volatile product can cause drift, and Bradley says there shouldn't be any more nighttime spraying of dicamba, which is part of the new label requirements. Jean Payne is the president of the Illinois Fertilizer and Chemical Association. She says going into 2018, it's important for commercial applicators to remember that even if dicamba drift does not necessarily put a huge dent in someone's harvest results, it's still a violation of the law.
If you are off target, it is a violation of federal and state law. And these applicators in Illinois that get these warning letters, they count on their record for a period of 3 years. So if you start accumulating too many warning letters, and that's the lowest violation you can get, is basically the Department of Ag warning you that you did something wrong. You can lose your license if you accumulate enough points. So for the people that I work for, this is their livelihood. If you're an operator with 15 and 20 years experience, and you take a lot of pride in your work, and you still end up with 5 or 6 warning letters and you can't explain what you did wrong, those people are very troubled by that. And so we have to work together as an industry and not slough off that, oh, there wasn't yield damage, so life is good.
And Jay Magnuson, a farmer and full-time agronomist in northwest Iowa, says dicamba is not an easy product to use correctly. As an agronomist, he does not want to spend time next summer walking through damaged fields. One way to move forward in the dicamba debate is communications, he says, between farmers.
Like Roundup, we're not going to have all the fields in the neighborhoods be Roundup, so we can pretty much just let it spray everywhere. We're going to have to watch because we're going to have conventional beans. We're going to have Liberty beans. We're going to have guys that stay with straight Roundup beans for a while. So we're going to have 4 different technologies that we have to be aware of. Watch out for our neighbors. Here in northwest Iowa, we had a really good adaptation to flagging our fields. There was 4 different types of flags that were put next to fields so that we could have farmers and their neighbors talk to each other and know what was planted in the fields before making an application, a post-application to control our weeds.
It's important for applicators to remember the new label requirements, including training before the next spraying season begins. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. We're now joined by Pete Peterson at the Anderson's Climbers facility outside of Logansport, Indiana, where they make ethanol. Thanks so much, Pete, for being with us on this day before Thanksgiving. Probably pretty quiet there, isn't it?
It is to a point. We've got, everybody's got contracts versus the December futures. We're talking to them about getting stuff priced or rolled, so it's got a little bit of activity.
Yeah, so what kinds of things are they asking, and what are you telling them?
Big question mark is, obviously what the trend is for futures prices. And at this point in time, 60 days ago, I think the marketplace was anticipating maybe the yields may be a little bit thinner for Indiana and the USDA numbers may be a little far-fetched. But some areas here in northern Indiana went out there and got it and found that yields were a little better than expected. So right now we're kind of all concerned about what that January report is going to bring.
Do you have corn on the ground there?
We do not. We do at our Delphi facility. We've got a couple good-sized bunkers, and the neighbors here across the street do, but we do not here.
And how much corn at Delphi do you know?
On the ground right now, we've got approximately 2.5 million down there, so it's quite a bit.
How quickly will you get that corn picked up?
It's all, indicative to the carries in the marketplace, but typically that will be out there until, I would say probably Feb, March, maybe a little longer now.
Okay. And what are conditions for you at the ethanol plant today?
Conditions are, the weather has held for a couple days here. We've had some pretty heavy rains over the last week. We're still trying to get some harvest done in the north, and that's been the biggest question mark is just when that's going to happen and then finally get harvest wrapped up.
Now, how much do they have left to bring in?
Oh, I would say you're probably talking less than 5%, but, that's could be have a long tail to it.
And what are your expectations for bases between now and, I don't know, you pick a time frame, whether that's the end of the year or shorter?
I think right now in the December time frame, typically it's time of year where not a lot of grain movement happens just for the simple fact that guys have just fought the battle of harvest and tucked it away for a long winter's nap and, typically don't pull it out until after the first year. December might have a little room for improvement, but I think after the first year, if grain starts to move again, it could get a little sloppy for a little bit.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us for the day.
Thank you.
You have a good Thanksgiving. That, of course, is Pete Peterson. He is with the Andersons. This is the Closing Market Report for Wednesday afternoon. It's the 22nd day of November. We're joined by Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. La Nina is the word of the week, and it involves Argentina and that South American soybean crop, corn too, I suppose. Can you tell me, Drew, what you see there?
Well, it certainly is drying down across Argentina. We're seeing opportunities for rain come and go, and they're trying real hard to bring some meaningful moisture to the country. The midday computer forecast models today were actually trying real hard to make the second week of the outlook in Argentina a little bit wetter. If that actually happens, then we'll see a little bit more relief. But well, there's a lot of folks out there a little skeptical about it. The problem is La Nina events in the past, at least the two most recent La Nina events, really hurt Argentina fairly significantly, and the drought that evolved in those last two events was fairly significant. However, everyone's short-term memory has not recognized the fact that La Nina events prior to that were not that terribly punishing to Argentina, and only parts of the country were too dry, and I think that's what we're probably going to see out of this growing season coming up. And I'm not done with my thinking that perhaps there's going to be some relief coming up in the next two or three weeks that will help to prevent this drying tendency right now from becoming something more serious. So we'll have to take it a day at a time, I suppose. But for right now, certainly in the next 7 days, we are not going to see enough moisture in central or southern parts of Argentina to bolster soil moisture, and net drying will be the case. And we're going to focus in on the second week of December for a more meaningful opportunity for change.
A little bit further to the north, Mato Grosso in particular, the Brazilian crops. We're still hearing whispers that that crop may not have been put into the ground on time. I'm not quite certain that's truly the case.
Yeah, you know, there's definitely some areas in Mato Grosso that did not get planted as quickly as they would like to see happen. I think there's no question that some areas were just too dry. But other areas in the state did fairly well, regardless of the below-average precipitation bias. And so it's going to be interesting to see how this comes out in the wash here as we get into January, February, when harvest takes place and we start planting the second-season crops. Most likely, we have hurt a little bit of the crop. I don't think it's a tremendous problem, especially since I think the forecast for the next few weeks is going to be quite beneficial for not only Mato Grosso, but many of the key soybean-producing areas from there into São Paulo and Minas Gerais and Paraná. And so for that reason, I think that their production will be fairly good. But I'm still worried about that second-season corn crop more than I am the soybean.
Why is that the case?
Just because we were late getting some of the soybean crop into the fields, and so therefore it'll be a little late coming out. And if we delay the planting of the second-season crops, they may reproduce during a time period when seasonal rains have ended, and that may make a bit of a shortage of moisture for those second-season crops to yield normally with. So we'll probably end up a little short.
This is because, unlike the United States, there is a wet season and a dry season in that part of the world?
That's exactly right. And when it quits raining, it quits raining. And usually that's around the end of March or April, depending on the year. If we can extend this rainy season by a month this year, it would really help a lot. But I'm not convinced that that'll be the case.
Hey, thanks so much, Drew.
You bet. Have a great day.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. Look us up and listen to us anytime on demand at WILLAG.org. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.